Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. Tech trends. Yeah, there's a whole lot of them, but we're going to talk about tech trends in real estate investments today. We've actually covered quite a few topics in 2021 that were related to real estate. We did a whole series, and thank you to Lending Standard and Eric Perkins of the Perkins Brothers that gave us some strong support with that. But today I want to talk about the tech that drives it. This is a hot space, and I've got an amazing guest today with me today. I've got Liza Benson, and she is a partner at Modern Ventures, and that's Modern with an E at the end. You can find a link in the show notes to go to modernventures.com. I will save an explanation for what they do in just a moment. First, I want to let you know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. As mentioned, with me today, Liza Benson, partner at Modern Ventures. Liza, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thanks, Matt. Really excited to be here and get going.
Yeah, let's kick things off with you giving us a little bit about your backstory.
Sure. Well, I want to tell you a little bit about Modern Ventures, then I'll go into sort of my career history. So we're an early stage venture fund focused on the real estate, home services, fintech, and insurtech industries. When we think about real estate, we think about multifamily, we think about commercial, we think about SFR, single family rental, and residential. Everything that we do at Modern needs to have a strategic bent. About half of our limited partners are actually native and strategic to the real estate industry. That's everyone from Avalon Bay, Camden Properties, Graystar, the largest multifamily operator in the U.S., Realogy, one of the largest public brokerages in the U.S., Essent Mortgage Insurance. These are all LPs of ours. And fundamentally, they've invested in Modern Ventures, not just for the venture returns, but to get insight and innovation to help their businesses move forward. So it's very important that every company that we invest in fits into the idea of a channel, a partnership, a pilot, something with our larger LP and advisor base. So we're a bit different from a typical venture firm in that sense. We actually just closed, which was announced this summer, our $200 million second institutional fund. This is a significant uptick from our last fund, which was about $43 million. So this was kind of our real debut in terms of our fund. In terms of my background, I'm probably about 23 years of venture and growth equity experience. Was at two prior to Modern, which I joined about 4 years ago. I was with two different firms for the entirety of my career, essentially. And at Modern, my main job function is finding new deals, due diligence in them, executing on those deals, sitting on boards and helping them grow.
So when we talk about just say real estate tech, that's a pretty, that, as you mentioned, that's a pretty broad range of stuff. And, you know, you've seen this massive transformation for companies that didn't even exist, like Airbnb, to becoming the biggest hotelier out there. And this whole landscape has changed. And I think it's very much for the betterment of the community, because there was a lot of disruption that needed to occur. Now that we're, I don't know when Airbnb came out, and so 10, 15 years ago or something like that, and it's obviously it's a brand name now. What are the things that are now trending and moving at a higher velocity that aren't that?
Well, I mean, I think if you even look at something, you know, which obviously was the news a lot last year, like WeWork, right? So what was the innovation that WeWork did, right? People don't want in commercial leases long-term contracts where they have to build out the space themselves that have limited amenities. You know, they want their commercial space like they want everything else on their phone, right? They don't want to have these long-term commitments. They want to make it easy, right? And, you know, fundamentally, you could talk about WeWork's business model and some of the issues, obviously, that they had there. But fundamentally, that innovation of commercial space in a more consumerized way is fundamentally something, you know, going forward, is even becoming more prevalent with the hybrid work that's coming about, right? So people are realizing they're not going to have their employees in the office 5 days a week. And why do they need as much space as they had before? So, you know, using co-working, whether it's, you know, a WeWork or, you know, there's now tons of obviously other brands out there, makes a lot of sense, but there's a lot of problems inherent with that as well, which is how do you figure out which people should be in the office together each day, right? There's all these different issues that you need to figure out that, you know, is a trend that we're certainly looking at, and you could call it kind of the future of work, which is how do you figure out this new hybrid work style and to be as productive as you were before, while keeping your employees happy, who often are demanding, you know, some work from home days.
Right, right. And, you know, that's been a real hot topic. You kind of answered what was going to be my next question, which was how the pandemic it's changed real estate for sure.
Well, I mean, that's one topic, yeah. but there's sort of many more, I would say. I mean, we really saw the pandemic as an accelerant. I mean, obviously, at the beginning, I don't think anyone really knew what was going to happen. I'll give you an example. I mean, a lot of our companies that serve the residential real estate arena, initially, we were very concerned, given that you couldn't show a house, you couldn't do any of these things, that there was going to be a, you know, housing crisis, right? Well, everything happened exactly differently than we thought in terms of that, right? I mean, we've never seen home sales, you know, appreciate so much in price in such a short period of time, right? So, you know, that happened. And we actually had a company called HomeSnap acquired during that period of time for a very nice price, you know, because of this acceleration in residential real estate. The other trends that we've seen sort of in the multifamily space, and when I say multifamily, that is rental buildings. So a lot of the rental buildings in the U.S. are owned by large public REITs like, you know, Avalon and Camden. And the changes that happened there were pretty fundamental as well. You know, everyone has really embraced doing as much things with less people as a directive at this point. If you can do leasing virtually, if you can have self-guided tours, if you can have less maintenance staff on hand because there's an app-based way to report problems, all of these things are being. I would say adopted more rapidly than we've ever seen, you know, due to what happened in the pandemic, when having people around was simply dangerous.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that seems to be adopted on a much larger scale is the idea of time arbitrage, which is basically what you just described with a lot of the prop tech that comes out. And, you know, I never really realized, I'm not in the real estate business, but I never had really realized that when I say time arbitrage, like how do you get time back and how do you make things more efficient? And it was actually a former guest was explaining that most of the time when a property manager has to send someone to fix whatever, wherever, that person spends 60% of their time finding keys and putting keys back. And you look at what you're paying for, you know, and these are all, I mean, saving money is making money. You got to sell more, spend less, all of it. And I think that there's a, a level of adoption that is coming. I see it's so many emerging property tech companies in general, and it seems like their total addressable market's pretty massive. So is there room for a ton of prop tech companies out there, or are we likely to see a whale come and swallow everyone up?
I mean, I think, you know, obviously there's been a lot of press around prop tech and real estate tech, but really of the VC dollars out there, which by the way is record numbers this year in terms of the numbers of dollars invested and the number of dollars invested in funds, only about 3% today goes to real estate tech or prop tech. And real estate is 20% of the US GDP, right? So although we're seeing a lot of noise around it, I think we're really in the early innings of the prop tech, real estate tech revolution.
So one of the things, and I won't put you on the spot to answer this, but I mentioned when it comes to like general disruption, I still wonder like if I want to sell my house, why I have to pay 6% to a realtor that is invariably not doing the same thing they did 20 years ago for some of that. And I've been waiting for something to come along to disrupt that. I'm really honestly shocked that that hasn't become something that's been so addressed. Cause you know, you look at the automation, the marketplace tools, like I usually, last time I bought a house, which has been a while, I told the realtor all the places I wanted to look at, not the other way around. So for those of you that are looking for something to disrupt, go ahead and get started on that. Now, for some of the things when it comes to emerging tech in real estate, I mean, I've got a pretty lengthy list of things that our production team put together. It's everything from social media platforms, data analytics. Here's one that I had never heard of, TRIMM, T-R-I-M-M, turnovers, renovations, inspections, and maintenance management.
Yeah.
Those sound like different things.
One of the biggest trends you're seeing, you know, that really emerged from the 2008 financial crisis is the growth of single family rental, right? You have a lot of these institutions coming in and buying up homes, right? So they're buying up homes and, you know, they're buying up these single family homes that aren't necessarily in a community together. They're, you know, they're scattered all over the place and they need to be maintained. So there's a lot of different companies that are trying to serve the SFR vertical. And that's for maintenance requests. That's for turns, meaning when someone moves out, the unit has to be cleaned and painted and things of that nature. We have actually a company that does the lawn care and maintenance called Task Easy for SFRs. So I think a lot of that outsourced piece is coming from the single family rental vertical, which is growing very, very quickly and actually putting a lot of pressure on housing prices as well, because you also have, you know, have individuals who want homes, and then you have institutions who come up, pay all cash for these homes.
Is that the same thing that happened 13 to 15 years ago?
Yeah, that's the single family rental market from an institutional perspective. I mean, obviously there's always been mom and pops where, you know, you have a friend who owns a few houses and he rents them out and, you know, takes care of them. We call that kind of the mom and pop SFR. But what really emerged post 2008 was the institutional SFR. So the institutional FSR, whether that's Invitation Homes, which is a public company, or whether that is, you know, Blackstone, they all have huge divisions that are buying up single family homes to rent them out.
So they basically need enterprise solutions to maintain. It's everything from mow the lawn to set up the trash. And I got to tell you, I said I'm not a real estate guy. That was partially true. I mean, I haven't owned a rental home in 15 years, but I owned them on the good side of the bubble. So the sales gods or the entrepreneur gods, thank you for letting me be on the good side of that. But I did learn one thing.
What if you had owned 20 of those and you had to field maintenance requests, right? Because
I own three.
Oh, you own three.
I had to deal with I had to deal with it, you know, with that. And the one thing is, I'll tell you, if you don't give renters an easy access to fix stuff, they never will. That's
true.
How you show up and you're like, wow, everything here is broken. I was on a really good side of that. And, you know, so overall, when it comes to TRIMM, TRIMM, that's all in one unit turnover and property operations, could be mobile platforms connected to a singular back office platform. that allows teams to tackle mobile inspections, vendor engagement, procurement, work orders, approvals, preventative maintenance, alerts, escalations, and other stuff. And yeah, I guess if you think about that coming in on an enterprise basis and they're in scattered areas, then yeah.
These even apply to like other things. So like, let's say you have a what we call garden style units in multifamily rental. So it is a community, but they're each sort of individual townhomes or units that are sort of, you know, or more in a garden style, as it's called. They each have individual HVAC units, right? HVAC is one of the most expensive things to break in the home. Right now, a lot of people are companies are looking at putting monitoring devices on that for that preventative maintenance that you mentioned, because if you can change out the fan belt before it breaks or whatever, as you can extend the life of those units. So it's another thing that people are doing in the preventative maintenance forefront.
Yeah, I recently saw a company that was like a home concierge that they were in the business of, hey, Liza, it's time to change your air filter. It's time to do this. It's time to do that. And it's kind of funny because at first I was like, well, why would I need that? Because I do that stuff myself. And then I thought about the last time I changed my air filter.
We actually have a couple modern companies focused on that. So I mentioned Task Easy, which is the lawn maintenance and snow removal company, also adding pools into that mix. We have another company called Super, which is a home warranty company. Are you familiar with home warranties?
Home
warranties are more popular, not necessarily in New York, but like California, Texas. A lot of people, when they sell a home, it's the expectation that a home warranty is included, where your home insurance ends, your home warranty sort of starts. So it's for all the mechanicals of your home. So your fridge, your dishwasher, your HVAC. And we have a company called Super that is sort of revolutionizing that industry. It's a very stodgy old industry where if you have a complaint with you have an issue at your home, you call your home warranty company, you wait on the phone for an hour or two. A couple of weeks later, a guy shows up, you never know when, and maybe it's fixed, maybe it's not. And they might even deny you service to say, when you bought this house, it was already broken, right? There's all these other things around it. So Super is a home warranty company, which is really looking to change how home warranties work. It's an app-based it's an app-based program where you can push a button, tell them something's broken, and they'll send out a contractor within a day or two, and you actually even know exactly when that contractor is going to show up, and you can rate that contractor. And they actually just raised $50 million from Wells Fargo to expand more nationally.
So that what you just described sounds really straightforward. Now, I'll tell you, as the founder of Gigabook, and that's a scheduling platform, you use it to schedule to be on the show. That's actually remarkably complex to do because I always like to kind of break this down when and where I can. So what you just described would invariably require some kind of geolocation because you don't necessarily have service providers who knows where everywhere all the time. There might be one day a month when someone's in that zip code. So you got to geolocate it. You usually have to sync with a bunch of different calendars in order to make that happen. There's different systems, stuff like that. You have to take into consideration things like buffers and drive times, because a lot of times those people get to where they need to be and then they're like, oh, wow, so I need more time than what I've got here. And there's a whole lot. It becomes exponentially difficult to coordinate all that. You usually have an invoicing aspect. You've got all different kinds of stuff. You mentioned like ratings and just all of it. Next thing you know, it is not easy. So building software is
certainly operationally intensive business. When I met the CEO, his name is Drury Raymer, I said, if any guy could do it, this guy can, because it's really, really tough business. But they're doing a phenomenal job in terms of delivering on what they say through, a huge investment in tech.
Yeah. But that's still time arbitrage in many ways. You talk about you picture a square, and that's what I was going to say is, you go from top to the side, go 1, 2, 3, 4. You don't want to go from 1 to 3, and back to 1 and then down to 4 and then over to 2. And like you end up as a business owner, that's time arbitrage because you're still paying the people to drive around. And then you also have things like dead time in the middle. And I've seen even some interesting startups that work with scheduling platforms similar to Gigabook or other stuff out there to try to help you fill those spots.
Yeah.
Like if you can generate some kind of money or revenue in the middle, you're in pretty good shape. So now before we move into the second half of our conversation today, a quick reminder, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably and helping you figure out all the complex stuff that you might not know how to do. All right. So let's talk about IoT stuff for a second. So there's just a whole world burgeoning of smart locks, access control, accountability. Some of that was really, really needed. Like we had people reaching out to Gigabook in droves when the pandemic first hit, wanting to do like capacity management and stuff like that. And like, you know, a lot of it's about who are we going to let in, who are we going to let out and not have to be there to turn the key. I mean, is that still a major area for growth, just for, not only for products, I mean, but for the tech that supports it?
There's so many aspects of that. You know, in the multifamily space, there's been a lot in terms of digital locks and provisioning people's entry into places like gyms at certain times, how many people are in the gym. So kind of that entry piece of it, which is really important. You know, and another piece of sort of the whole, you know, IoT piece is monitoring. So, you know, if you want to know in an empty apartment building, when the toilet overruns and causes before it causes a flood in the person below you, you can, there's certainly IoT devices that, you know, sense moisture, at this point that a lot of multifamilies are deploying in vacant units. The issue with that, of course, is you have to have building Wi-Fi to make sure that you can pick up on that. So there are some infrastructure things that need to be done. As we mentioned earlier, you know, HVACs, you know, putting IoT devices on them, you know, to monitor how much it's shaking or whatever it might be to see if it needs some preventative maintenance. This is also happening in commercial buildings. So the engines that run commercial buildings in terms of the elevators and the HVACs and all those types of things are being monitored, you know, not only for preventative maintenance, but also for energy usage, which is obviously another thing we haven't talked about, which is obviously the entire sort of ESG trend is very important to commercial landlords. And how can they, you know, why do they have heat on in rooms that people aren't in, right? There's a lot of different things that you can do to minimize your energy consumption.
Is that a problem that AI and machine learning are probably bound to solve for
AI,
a lot of these
machine
things?
Learning yeah. and you know, IoT devices to monitor, you know, what's actually happening.
Yeah, and that seems to me like even like my Nest thermostat. Although I will say it's usually not right. I threw it for a curve. It was like, hey, dude, you were here like you never left for like a year and a half and now you're leaving. What do I do? So, yeah, I was freezing. I'm here in my home office and we have a new office we started going to 2 days a week. But now I'm trying to figure out how to not waste energy there. So that's a whole nother problem that who knows. OK, so still on my list of things that we're going to go into, like, all right, so obviously everyone seems to be obsessed with blockchain and crypto and stuff like that. What role does that have to, what's the future for real estate investments and just real estate in general when it comes to anything related to blockchain, if there is any?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always been a lot of talk about, you know, making this huge asset class of real estate tokenized, right? So it can be traded, right? And that's something, you know, certainly a lot of different companies are tackling. You know, I think in the idea of blockchain, you know, obviously it would be used in the tokenization. There are other applications that people have thought of in real estate to use the blockchain for. You know, one thing that makes perfect sense to me, which hasn't been perfected yet, is title insurance, right? Title insurance is essentially a chain of ownership for who owns that property. Wouldn't that be perfect on the blockchain as opposed to having to pay, you know, $2,000-$4,000 for your title insurance? Everyone's wondering why the hell you have to pay so much money for it. So, I mean, I think there are other applications, you know, document management in terms of the blockchain in real estate is something that people have talked about as well. So I'm not sure there's been, you know, a killer app yet in terms of, you know, real estate and blockchain, but I think there will be.
It's a kind of an interesting story about why that would be necessary. So we had referred to the housing bubble, our financial crisis. And I had a buddy who got caught on the bad side of it, and he called me looking for some advice. And my father was an attorney, practicing attorney at the time. And I called him up. I said, what can I tell this guy? He said, go back and tell him to call the lending people that are wanting to foreclose on him, and said, show me the contract I signed. And they couldn't because so many things were just flying in 10 in 100 different directions. And in 2008, as modern as we felt we weren't. So show me the signature. And they couldn't, because some of those places you talk about the bubble, you know, that bubble actually bursting. I mean, some of them were like, they were there and then they weren't. So yeah. And that actually, good, I mean, for him.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, great for someone else, but an immutable ledger would have solved that problem. An immutable ledger
would have solved that now. You know, can I tell you everything is, you know, much better now? I mean, listen, my partner originally invested in DocuSign in like 2008, and we still, you know, all residential real estate transactions, a lot of them use DocuSign, a lot of them don't, right? I mean, there is actually some technology to track this sort of stuff. People simply don't use it. You know, the idea is that everyone goes into a real estate closing with your lawyer, their lawyer. It still happens most of the time.
Yeah. I was thinking smart contracts are probably the place that has mega growth. And, you know, that's what's driving a lot of, like, you see Ethereum and different things which smart contracts are typically built upon kind of growing. And I don't know, man, it's a beautiful world when it comes to the possibilities that could come out. You know, one of the things we've talked about so many times on this show is just asking the reasonable question of, like, you know, where are startups going? Has everyone done everything? And the answer is certainly not.
No.
There is a hell of a lot of improvement. And by the time this comes out, this will be old news. I was watching 60 Minutes last night, and they did a whole thing on why our supply chain's broken. And, you know, I'm curious if the supply chain management stuff and all the logistics things, if you think that is the inability to have that operate properly, does that create even more of a need for real estate tech, or does it hobble it? Or, like, because if you're talking about building stuff, you're waiting 3 and 4 months for a window. You can't finish selling the house until it has a window in it. You know, it's kind of insane.
Yeah, I mean, we have, well, certainly, listen, anyone who's redone their kitchen or their bathroom during the pandemic has felt these supply chain issues, you know, both from a price and availability perspective, where, you know, the prices are skyrocketing for all these basic materials, even, and if you can even get them, right? So the refrigerator takes 6 months, the stove takes 6 months, all these type of things. You know, we actually are thinking about, you know, the housing crisis really in a more revolutionary way at Modern. We have a company called Icon, which is actually 3D printing homes on site. Mm-hmm. So think of a giant 3D printer, and think about cement coming out of a 3D printer that almost looks like kind of like a Mr. Softy ice cream cone in terms of how it's built. And the company is actually, you know, has built homes in Mexico, is now building 100 homes in Texas with Lennar that are going to be, you know, sold at market rates. And, you know, this, they can actually print a home in just a few days.
We may have had them on the podcast. Is that the same company that was on a Netflix special at one point, or Apple TV or something like that?
Yeah,
or?
No, they've had some stuff on that as well. They're also doing stuff for NASA as well as the DOD, where they can build barracks for soldiers, you know, very, very quickly. Yeah. They can build temporary blinds and things of that nature. So company just raised about $200 million. So it has been in the news a lot.
Not sure if that was them or not. It may have been. It was pretty interesting. And, you know, just the ability, well, time arbitrage on that one. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be automated. Okay. So You know, we talk, for those of you listening, I was just sitting here thinking, I'm like, this show is a treasure trove of great ideas for entrepreneurs to figure out how to solve. I mean, it really kind of has been. I mean, there's so many different things that, you know, if you look at the rising, I know I mentioned the 6% realtor fee, which I question. I don't think anybody that's ever sold a home is like, you know what? I love this. Like, I think it should be higher. I mean, if you think about the amount of revenue or potential capital there is out there just created from that. I mean,
well, I mean, Matt, I'll give you a little bit of a counter to that. You know, discount brokerages, you know, have been around for 15, 20 years. You know, the percent of people who use a real estate agent to buy or sell their home has been relatively steady during that period of time in the high 80s. Yeah. Fundamentally, I mean, I think, you know, it is the biggest purchase and sale of most people's lives, and to have that, not have that human contact there to guide them, I think it has been difficult. Not to say there's not pressure on it. So the pressure is mostly been felt by these institutional iBuyers, the Open Doors, formerly Zillow, people like this who will do all cash offers for homes, which do cut out the real estate agent.
Maybe we should talk about that for a second, because we like talking about failure on this show too. So Zillow was, be kind of older news at this point, but I didn't even realize Zillow was buying and basically flipping houses. And I don't know too much about it, but I do know that they gave up on it and they said no more, and basically dumped about 7,000 houses to decide to get out of that. So in some cases, you know, you would think Zillow would or could be pretty good at that. I mean, I'm assuming you're familiar with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Where did that go wrong?
I mean, you know, don't know exactly, but, you know, they were essentially using an algorithm to bid on homes. And with the home prices changing so rapidly, either, you know, accelerating at one rate as opposed to another, they just got caught. And I fundamentally think that it's not like this model doesn't work. You know, there are other iBuyers out there that it is working for, but you have to remember their margin for error in this is very low. So the difference between what the market prices of the house and what they buy it for is generally 5 to 8%. So if you're wrong, you know, or the market turns on you while you're holding that property, a profit can very quickly go to a very large loss.
Yeah, and I would, like you said, some of this stuff, I mean, you break models. And it's been a nutty year. I was, you know, mentioning the logistics thing, you know, one of the, we have a video version of Startup Hustle. If you haven't checked it out, just go to YouTube and type in Startup Hustle. But one of our cast members is a YouTube star named Eric Perkins, who builds homes. And he's had footage and comments in there. He's like, you know, you can't finish closing the home until the home's done being built. And that literally means if you have to wait 3 months for like two windows to come in, you're not done. And it slows things down. And we've had quite a few people talk about that side of it. And then also just goofy stuff like the window company wouldn't ship all the windows because they were missing like a couple like clasps.
Yeah.
Like not even the window, like just a small piece of hardware, but it didn't trigger to send it. And
yeah, if you're trying to fix
that problem.
If you're trying to do a flip and time is of the essence, because every month that you hold it, you have your carrying costs, right? Where you're having to pay the mortgage or your financing on that project. You know, 6 month delays for window can really eat into your profits.
Okay, so, you know, we've talked about a lot of stuff. We raced through a pretty, give our production team a big thumbs up for coming up with a nice list of quality stuff. I mean, some of the things we didn't talk about were things like virtual tours, automated data entry. You know, we've had a partner here on the show, a lending standard, and go to lendingstandard.com, that created a whole marketplace trying to help people get loans for multifamily. And, you know, there was like so much technology around commercial and also single family. And then there was like a whole segment in the middle that was absorbed. And as I got to talk to their founder, I didn't realize that there was so much time, effort, and energy that went into just closing a single transaction. you know, when we talk about trends, what, you know, obviously with 20% of the US GDP, it being real estate, why do you think it feels like on so many days that it's a segment that's lagging? You know, you have like so many things that are just become remarkably cutting edge and innovative. And then some of this stuff, you're like, wow, how do we not solve that yet?
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many aspects. I mean, even if we stick to the home buying process, you know, appraisals, insurance, that are all sort of in the dark ages, right? So I think there, you're going to continue to see, you know, a lot of innovation there. You know, fundamentally, real estate industry has been a very profitable industry, right? And fundamentally, they haven't necessarily had to change. I mean, I think when you have these seismic events that happen, like an Airbnb, like a WeWork, where people are realizing that they're losing the tenant landlord relationship and succeeding that to WeWork, do you really want to do that? I mean, I think there's a lot of different elements that happen that they're making the industry move. You know, the multifamily industry, with seeing what the effects of COVID were and how could they let more people, you know, out of the process. So I think, you know, the good news for me as a real estate tech investor is we still see a lot of greenfield in terms of, you know, things to invest in. There's no shortage of things to modernize and innovate on in the real estate industry.
And let's talk about that for a second too. And go to Modern Ventures. It's modern, put an E after it, ventures.com. The easiest thing is to go down to the show notes and click that link and it'll take you right to it. So you mentioned being an early stage investor. How early?
Good question. So we do not generally invest in pre-revenue seed companies. Here's fundamentally why. We generally want to have a company that we can present to our large LPs and partners. If they don't have a product yet, if they don't have product market fit yet, they haven't sold to some smaller parties before that, it's probably a little bit early for us. That being said, we have an accelerator program called the Passport Program, where we do take earlier companies that are under our threshold, which is about $2 million of revenue that we like to see. We take them, we help them accelerate their sales within the real estate vertical, and then hopefully we get them into the box where we can kind of invest later. So that's another program that we run for companies that may be too early for our investment thesis.
Can anyone listening find that from the Modern Ventures
website? Yeah, if you go on the Modern Ventures website, we're actually going to be opening up passport applications probably in late December, January. If you have a great real estate tech idea, you probably need to have a customer or two already, but if you do, we'd love to hear from you and you can fill out an application.
I see it right here, the Modern Passport Program. Yeah. And for those of you listening, that's now. So she mentioned December, January. That's now.
That is now, right?
Yeah. Currently taking applications for the Modern Passport
and
program.
I can tell you that.
That's time arbitrage in its finest, Liza. There you go.
There you go. There's past participants in this have included Hippo, which just SPAC'd, Better Mortgage, other companies that have been super successful. So we've had some really great success come out of the program.
So while we're here and preparing for our landing, there's a whole lot of portfolio companies on your website. What are some of the ones and I know you're excited about all of them.
They're all my children.
Like everyone loves their children equally, right? Okay.
I have no ugly ones.
There's no way that was true at my house. My sister was the favorite kid out of both of us. And it's best to just acknowledge that and be honest. But who are a few?
I'll tell you my newest investment because that's something that can't be argued with. So one of the things that is going to be a hot topic coming up is the EV cars taking over in terms of the percent they are of the cars in the US. I mean, today it's like 3% or so, but by 2025, about 20% of cars are going to be EV based. In the whole US, in terms of all commercial parking, whether that's rental buildings or commercial buildings, only about 0.5% of those spots have an EV charger on them. 0.5%. So obviously there's going to need to be a lot more EV chargers put out there by landlords, by commercial real estate holders, because people aren't going to come to your building if they can't charge their car, right? That's going to be a fundamental problem. So we just invested in a company called Zeal, which solves some of the problems around EV chargers. Most EV chargers, you need to actually have a Wi-Fi or a cell phone connection. Well, guess what? If you're in a subterranean garage, there is no Wi-Fi and there is no cell signal unless you do a very expensive wiring of that subterranean garage. Zeal actually uses the near field communication on your phone to tap the charger so that you can unlock the charger. You can pay for your charge and you can leave that a Wi-Fi connection or a cell signal. So this is going to make it much, much cheaper to install EV chargers. And we're really excited about it.
And that Zeal, that's X-E-A-L energy.com. Yes, yes. I'm checking out their site. That's cool stuff. That's probably spills over into commercial real estate as well. That's one of the things that's, you know, I mentioned we just moved Startup Hustle and Full Scale to a new office, and the infrastructure in the area, to put it kindly, the infrastructure in the area we moved into needs some upgrade. and that's part of why we're there, to try to help spark a little something that's going on down there. But yeah, the fact that I have one vehicle that's kind of it's a hybrid and just doesn't have a big range. And I'd love to be able to charge it when I was down there and do something. I mean, I'd pay for it. I'm not asking for a free hookup or anything.
Yeah. So. I mean, listen, and from a landlord perspective, a lot of the EV chargers that are out there are old and don't have, the ability to charge, but they should charge for it. It is the electricity you're taking. So Zeal also gives them the ability to, set rates and charge.
Yep. So with that, we are about out of time here, Liza. And for those of you that listen to my shows regularly, you know, I like to end with the Founders Freestyle. I say my shows, it's because I am not the only host of Startup Hustle. Before I talk a little bit about that, a quick reminder that today's episode of Startup Hustle was brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. So I'm not the only host. If you listen regularly, you know that. Make sure to tune in weekly and join Lauren Conaway, the founder and CEO of Innovator. You go to innovatorkc.org if you want to learn more about what they do. And then also join Andrew Morgans to talk all about e-commerce and Amazon, weekly spots there. And if that's not enough, I hope you're enjoying our guest host series that we've been doing. Liza, we have been bringing in people that are experts and letting them bring guests to the show because we just like to talk about all things entrepreneurship and we don't know it all. Now, I said I end my episodes with the Founders Freestyle. Now, I will ask for, and you can say whatever you want here, but usually we go with a few things related to what stood out from today's show, and then hopefully a little bit of advice for founders that just want to be better or do more.
So you're looking for me to give you advice on what founders should do better? Is that what you were asking?
The listeners, maybe. Well, listeners. And that's up to you. I mean, I even had one guy rap. Like literally freestyle. I mean, it is a freestyle. You can say whatever you want. I like to give people some guidance on that. So maybe they decide, but it's your freestyle, Liza.
Yeah. Let me put it this way. Here's my advice. If you're writing a VC an email, don't just write an email that says, here, look at my deck. Have a paragraph or two that actually explains what you do so we can screen it. That'd be my 2 cents for today.
You know what? I'm going to second that motion because quoting myself, no one wants to read your 50-page document. It's that simple. I tell people that all the time. I actually told someone that earlier today. If you can't put it on the front of a piece of paper, it's too much for the first intro. That's for later. You know, overall, I think for me, the big takeaway I've got from this episode is, man, there is a lot of disruption and a lot of opportunity in a massive worldwide total addressable market for so many different things that we talked about. I mean, I think that it's easy to look at the world of startups and be like, oh man, everybody's done everything. And, am I going to be 10th to the party? No. Pick something, get real good at it and see what happens. I mean, really in the end, that's kind of what entrepreneurship's all about. But I mean, just based on today's show, we dropped 8 or 9 different areas or segments that are ripe for growth and all of it. So get to work, people, get to work. And with that, Liza and I are going to get back to work. So we'll see you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.